If you enjoy genres like slowcore, post-hardcore, noise rock, math rock, shoegaze, or anything like that, tune into Past Tense 9 p.m. Wednesdays on CFRC. It also airs 9 p.m. Mondays on luradio.ca and 9 p.m. Thursdays on cjlo.com.
You are listening to the only destination for local music, sports, and news, CFRC 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca.
Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's news collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Lauren Tucker, Dinah Jansen, and Paige Lang. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. Tonight, we have plenty of messages directly from the city of Kingston. To start us off, 2000 Front Road Community Update. A connected and accessible waterfront and increasing opportunities for urban farming are cornerstones of the city of Kingston's Waterfront Master Plan and 2023-26 strategic priorities, respectively. The waterfront farm property at 2000 Front Road, known to many as the Lemoyne Point Farm, has held the interest of the city for several years and provides opportunities for the city to advance both initiatives. Mary Frazier, the property's longtime owner, passed away in 2022. Her will gives the city an option to purchase the property on a number of terms, including keeping, as far as possible, the property zoned for rural use. The city and Ms. Frazier's estate trustees disagree on how to interpret parts of Ms. Frazier's will. As a result, the estate trustees have applied to the court for advice and direction on the interpretation of the will. The city recognizes the importance of respecting Ms. Frazier's intentions, as well as the property's natural and cultural heritage significance to the residents of Kingston. The city is committed to continuing to work with the estate trustees through negotiation, mediation, or if necessary, litigation to advance the city's interpretation of Ms. Frazier's will. The city appreciates the input of community organizations and residents and remains open to hearing from community members who share the vision of protecting this unique part of Kingston's waterfront and history. In another update from the city, new road and paths opening on Cataract Way Woods Drive Extension. Pedestrians, cyclists, and motorists alike can enjoy the newly opened Cataract Way Woods Drive Extension in Kingston's West End. The new section of roadway, which began construction in fall of 2021, will be opening for use, connecting Simbem Road to Centennial Drive and further west to Princess Street. The transportation project manager with the City of Kingston states, quote, "This new section of Cataract Way Woods Drive provides a safe route to walk, bike, roll, or drive through the area. It offers a more direct and efficient route along this corridor while also helping avoid unnecessary traffic through residential streets in the surrounding neighborhoods." End quote. A new multi-use path, an off-road shared area for pedestrians and cyclists, was included along the south side of Cataract Way Woods Drive within the project area. This path connects the existing multi-use path on Centennial Drive, leading to the K&P Trail. The new section of roadway also includes a sidewalk on the north side and on-road bike lanes with a buffer to separate cyclists and motorists. While the road, sidewalk, and paths are open for use, some remaining works will take place at a later date. With the support of Utilities Kingston, street lighting is scheduled to be installed later this summer. Learn more about other municipal transportation projects planned in Kingston on Get Involved Kingston. Coming up this weekend, giveaway day is August 17th. Adam Mueller, Operations Manager of Solid Waste Services at the City of Kingston, states, quote, "Giveaway days are an effective and unique way to reduce waste in Kingston. When you pick up free secondhand items, you not only save them from the landfill, you also reduce the waste associated with packaging and the greenhouse gas emissions associated with manufacturing new goods. Giving away items also helps community members save money," end quote. Share pictures of your giveaway day items on Instagram or Twitter at hashtag WasteNotYGK. Giveaway day guidelines. Only set out appropriate items that you know someone else might want. Appropriate items include books, CDs, DVDs, furniture and small appliances, electronics, construction materials, kitchen gadgets, dishes, cutlery, pots and pans, and yes, unwanted gifts. The Consumer Product Safety Bureau of Health Canada advises that the following items should not be given away or picked up: baby walkers, cribs, car seats, strollers, playpens, bath seats, mattresses, blinds, and toys. How to put items out. Place items at the curb in front of your home. Place stickers or signs on the items with the word free. Ensure any items that you do not want taken are kept away from items placed at the curb. At the end of the day, bring any uncollected items back into your home. The city will not collect unwanted items left at the curb. Consider donating them to a local charity. How to pick items up. Respect other people's property. Don't walk on lawns or gardens. Take only the items that are marked as free and placed at the curb. Don't leave previously picked up items on the curb at other people's property. Find these guidelines on the City of Kingston website. That wraps up your headlines for this evening, and next up is your CFRC Arts Desk with Lauren Tucker.
Thanks so much, Christina. Here's your arts and culture news for today. Continuing this month at the TED until August 31st, we'll be contemplating Glaciers, A Dialogue, a solo exhibition from Jan Kabatoff, curated by Jessica Turner, and this exhibition will include photography, sculpture, paintings, video, audio, and even a virtual reality element using the Oculus headset, as well as footage from a documentary on the melting of the Athabasca Glacier, which is currently in production from this creative team. All ages are welcome to peruse this exhibition in the TED Center Gallery, and it is free to do so, though exhibition hours may vary. You can tune in to last week's Kingston Curator to hear an interview about the project with curator Jessica Turner. There's also new events and exhibitions all the time at the TED, so you can learn more at tedcenter.org. This year's Kick and Push Festival, now in its 10th year as an interactive local theater festival, launched on July 25th and runs until August 18th across Kingston. Kick and Push specializes in one-of-a-kind, unexpected, and immersive shows that take the audience beyond passive observers, ranging from venues like the Grand Theater to the TED Center to the more unexpected. There's still some programming left to catch this week, and you can visit thekickandpush.com for more information. Registration for fall term programming at the Kingston School of Art is now open, including programs for youth and adults, as well as workshops and summer camps. This season includes adult classes in drawing, fiber and textile arts, mixed media, painting, printmaking, and sculpture. Youth programs are available for kids ages 6 to 16, as well as families, and there are also a variety of 1 and 2 day workshops available for registration. Applications are also now open for the first annual KSOA member show, and members can submit pieces on their website now. For more information and to register, visit ksoa.info. At Modern Fuel Art Gallery, in partnership with the Union Gallery, is the Twofold Artist in Residence program, led by co-directors Jill Glatt and Berlin Reed. This program provides an opportunity for local BIPOC artists to dive into their practices, collaborations, and discussions while having access to designated workspaces, professional development and mentorship, communal events, and a studio visit platform. This year's artists-in-residence are Shanique Pert, Alicia Udvari, Shamara Pert, and Samara Khan, who worked at the Union Gallery in July, and Modern Fuel Art Gallery now in August. For more information, visit uniongallery.queensu.ca. This and every summer Tuesday, you can head on down to Springer Market Square for Salsa in the Square. From 6:30 to 7:30 p.m., enjoy a free beginner class, and then hit the open dance floor until 10 p.m. Also, every Wednesday summer evening, enjoy Swingin' Summer, a live music throwback to the era of romantic, joyful, and jazzy songs from 7 to 8 p.m. And every summer Friday evening, Springer Market Square hosts Kickin' It Country from 7 to 8 p.m., featuring live local country music. For more on these events, visit downtownkingston.ca. Every Monday at Daft Brewing, Bon Evans hosts Music Trivia Mondays at 7 p.m. Put your music knowledge to the test in 4 more rounds of trivia, whether you're going it solo or in a team, with clips, questions, and more. The winning team walks away at the end of the night with a $50 gift card and bragging rights, so be sure to check it out for a Monday night of music and fun. Kingston welcomes back Movies in the Square and Springer Market Square on Thursday evenings this summer, and the full lineup has now been announced. This week, August 15th, Freaky Friday starts at dusk. You can also catch Night at the Museum Battle of the Smithsonian on August 22nd and Lilo and Stitch on August 29th. Be sure to mark your calendars now and bring your blankets, chairs, and bug spray to experience your favorite films for free this summer under the stars. Coming up at Kingston's Independent Cinema, The Screening Room, you can catch special screenings of 1964's A Hard Day's Night, celebrating its 60th anniversary on August 10th, 11th, 13th, and 15th. As well, 1940's Rebecca will be playing on August 17th, 18th, 20th, and 22nd as part of the Summer Alfred Hitchcock Presents series. You can also catch 2016's The Love Witch on August 11th and 1977's Three Women on August 18th as part of the Summer Movie Night screening by the Cinema Society of Kingston. As well, 1974's Phantom of Paradise will be playing its 50th anniversary screenings on August 17th, 20th, 21st, and 22nd. Also coming up at the screening room is Cat Video Fest 2024 from August 17th to 22nd, a fundraiser where 10% of all ticket sales will be donated to Kingston Animal Rescue, featuring compilations of the latest and best cat videos on the internet. There's also new arrivals and special screenings all the time, so be sure to check back at screeningroomkingston.com for all of your cinema adventures. That's all I've got for you in Arts Desk today. Now I'll turn it over to Jesse Bell at the Sports Desk.
This is Jesse Bell from the CFRC Sports Desk, and this is your sports report for Wednesday, August 14th, 2024. Today's sports report is the 12th and final part of our OUA football preview, and today we'll be making some predictions about the 2024 OUA football season. This is my prediction for the final standings in the OUA at the end of the 8-game regular season. Some of these picks might be controversial, including my pick for last place. I think it'll be the Toronto Varsity Blues, who finish 11th in the OUA with an 0-8 record. I think the York Lions will win a single football game in 2024, and it will be against the Varsity Blues. Waterloo will be 2-6 with their two wins coming against York and Toronto. McMaster will be 3-5, just missing the playoffs again for the third consecutive year. Guelph will be a playoff team at 4-4. Ottawa will be a playoff team at 4-4. Carleton and Windsor will both make the playoffs with identical 5-3 records. Laurier will finish 6-2, Western 7-1, and my big prediction is that Queens will finally be able to end that purple curse and defeat the Western Mustangs on September 28th, but lose to the Laurier Golden Hawks. So it'll be a 7-1 finish for Queens, but because they beat Western, who will beat Laurier, they will end up holding the tiebreaker, likely on point differential. So if the regular season does shake out as predicted, Queens would get a first-round bye, Western would play Guelph in the quarterfinals, Laurier would play Ottawa, Windsor would play Carleton. And in those quarterfinals, I have Western beating Guelph, Laurier beating Ottawa, and Carleton pulling off the upset over Windsor, thanks largely to an excellent performance by the passing game and a stout pass rush heavy performance from the defense. In the semifinals, I have Queens hosting Laurier and beating the Golden Hawks to avenge their regular season loss, and I have Western taking care of business with Carleton to advance to the Yates Cup final. The Yates Cup would be played at Richardson Memorial Stadium. The last time these two teams played a Yates in Kingston, the Mustangs shut out the Gales 29-0. And in the Yates Cup final, I have the Gales narrowly overcoming the Western Mustangs, becoming one of the few teams in the modern era to beat Western twice in the same season. In terms of individual awards, I think the OUA MVP will go to Queens running back Jared Kasari, who had a historic season last year and finished in third place in MVP voting. I think he takes it to that next level in 2024, aided in no small part by an improved passing game, as Alex Vreakin has his best season as a university player so far. Well, those are my way too bold and way too early predictions for the 2024 OUA football season. This is Jesse Bell signing off and leaving you once again with the teaser trailer for the upcoming year of Queens football on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Absolute heartbreaker at Richardson Stadium. I'm gonna be sick. This is the worst day of my life. Rolling, throwing. Picked. Ball game. Western will win as Alex Freakin's heroic attempt comes up short.
The greater the expectations, the heavier the weight. And in 2023, the Queen's Gaels had the weight of the world on their shoulders. And then it all came crashing down.
Alex Freakin is down after a gutless hit!
But in spite of the losses, the injuries, and the overwhelming weight of great expectations, this Gaels team did not crumble. And now a new season means new expectations, new pressures, new challenges, and most importantly, a new opportunity for the Gaels to be golden once more. Can this squad end the title drought? Will Queens become kings of Ontario football? There's only one way to find out, and there's only one place to catch all the action.
This is electric. This is Queens football on CFRC.
Now it's time for your CFRC weekly traffic report for the week of August 9th to 15th. Pavement rehabilitations will take place along Highway 401 between Westbrook Road to beyond the Highway 15 overpass and on the Sir John A. MacDonald overpass. This work will consist of various lane and ramp closures over the next several months. Highway 401 eastbound and westbound at Sir John A. MacDonald Boulevard on and off ramp closures. August 12th from 12 a.m. to 6 a.m. and 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. August 13th from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. August 14th from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. and August 15th from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. PSPC wishes to advise users that the LaSalle Causeway is still fully closed to motorists, cyclists, and pedestrians until further notice. In road closures to look out for this week, Albert Street, Princess to 486 Albert, closed until December 31st to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert. Cooper Street, Albert to Collingwood, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. For project details, you can visit Get Involved Kingston. Earl Street, University to Division, closed August 12th from 7 a.m. to August 16th at 5 p.m. for the reconstruction of Aberdeen Street. For details, you can visit Get Involved Kingston. Hillcrest Avenue, Kings Court to 7th, closed until September 1st for buried infrastructure replacement. The road will be open to local traffic. Johnson Street, Portsmouth to Robert Wallace, closed August 12th to 14th for gas main reconstruction. King Street, Plastarms to north end of King, closed until September 30th for the construction of new storm and roadbed. The road will be open to local traffic. Market Street, King to Ontario, closed August 9th from 7 a.m. to August 11th at 2 p.m. for the Thousand Islands Poker Run event. Sydenham Street, Princess to Queen, closed until September 27th for downtown Kingston BIA activations. Union Street, Victoria to Albert, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Project details are available at Get Involved Kingston. University Avenue, Union to Earl, closed for the removal of debris from the Queen's JDOC project. Wellington Street, Main to George, closed until August 30th to accommodate construction-related activity for the Berryfield Highlands subdivision project. In parking disruptions, the Hanson Memorial Parking Structure Restoration Project is underway and is expected to conclude in late December 2024. The work will be completed in phases to allow the building to remain mostly open to public parking for the duration of the project. There is also parking available at the Chan Memorial and Robert Bruce Memorial parking garages in the two adjacent blocks to the west. In other delays to look out for, Aberdeen Street, Johnson to Earl, expect delays and closures along Aberdeen Street. Bay Ridge Drive, Princess to Taylor Kidd, expect delays while a contractor completes work for the Bay Ridge Drive active transportation upgrades. Collins Bay Road, Prince Charles Edwin to Princess, expect delays while a contractor completes upgrades for the Princess and Collins Bay active transportation improvements. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2, Abidjan to St. Lawrence, expect a lane closure to complete enhanced flood protection of Abidjan Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. The lane closure will be controlled by a temporary traffic signal. John Counter Boulevard at Montreal Street, expect delays while a contractor completes interim intersection improvements. Work will take place overnight from Sunday night to Friday mornings during the week, and on weekends during the day. For details on all of these projects, you can visit Get Involved Kingston. That wraps up your traffic report for this evening. Next up is Dinah Jansen and Lauren Tucker with your events and concerts calendars.
today's live music lineup, I'll be featuring shows from fantastic local and visiting acts fast approaching to Kingston and surrounding area. Keep it locked because you won't want to miss these details. On Wednesday, August 14th at the club at RCHA is Craig Jones and the Alternative Facts with an evening of guitar stylings. This show is at 7 p.m., doors are at 4 p.m., and tickets are $5. On Wednesday, August 14th, Toronto-based Start Run Radio will be bringing their funk, jazz, and soul sounds to Hotel Wolf Island. The show is free, all ages, and the show kicks off at 6 p.m. On Thursday, August 15th at the Cove Inn is singer-songwriter Tony Silvestri as a part of Original Thursdays. This is a 5 p.m. all-ages show, and admission is by donation. Also on Thursday, August 15th at Hotel Wolf Island is Open Season Thursdays with Chris Brown, Joey Wright, and Jason Mercer, declaring open season on anything musical. Admission to this No Minor show is free, and the show is at 7 p.m. On Friday, August 16th at the Cove Inn, Music Westport 2024 kicks off with Kobo Town at 8:30 p.m. Tickets are $90 plus HST and gratuity, which includes dinner, a donation to the Westport Arts Council, and the roots reggae and calypso stylings of this Toronto ensemble. This is an all-ages show and opening party, and doors are at 7 p.m. Also on Friday, August 16th, are Exogen, Don't Tell Sarah, Arachnia, and Filthy, presented by Filthy Band and Don't Tell Sarah at Overtime Sports Bar. This lineup of hard rock and alt metal kicks off at 8:30 p.m., and it is a No Minor show. Tickets are $10 and doors are at 8 p.m. As part of Music Westport 2024 at the Cove Inn in Lockwood Park on Saturday, August 17th, from 12 to 6 p.m., you can catch Emily Steele and the Deal, Dennis Bauman, Liberation Street Band, Frank Ryan, Sunfields, Sean Pynchon, The Gertrudes, Foster, and Shane Sudak. Admission is free, and you can visit westportartscouncil.com for more. Also on Saturday, August 17th at Hotel Wolf Island is jazz pop duo Clear from La Pêche, Quebec. This all-ages show is at 6 p.m., and admission is free. Also on Saturday, August 17th, The Mansion celebrates its 15th anniversary with Destroyer, Canada's Kiss tribute. Doors to this No Minor show open at 7 p.m. The show starts at 8 p.m., and tickets start at just over $22. At Leopard Frog Farm on Sunday, August 18th, is the lively, lyrical Kingston folk act, Night Sun. Doors are at 1:30 p.m., the show starts at 2 p.m., and this show is free for all ages to attend. Last but certainly not least, Kings of Queens will be performing a patio show at the Mansion on Sunday, August 18th. This is a No Minor show with doors at 8 p.m. and the music starts at 9 p.m. Tickets are just under $16. For more on these awesome local shows, you can visit kingstonlive.ca. Now here's Dinah with your events calendar.
Thanks so much. And now it's time for your CFRC community events calendar. On Monday, the 12th, Runner's Choice is running its free weekly run group where all ages and paces are welcome to join in the fun social walk or run along the KP Trail. Meet up with the group at Riverhead Brewing at 5:30 p.m. Folks can also head over to the Newlands Pavilion gazebo in McDonald Park from 6 to 8 p.m., where folks can join in the fun and enjoy some summer swing dancing. All levels of dancers are welcome. Also on Monday night, One-Eyed Jacks hosts trivia from 7 to 10 p.m., and you can also head over to the Brass, which hosts trivia from 8 to 10 p.m. On Tuesday, August 13th, you can head on over to Springer Market Square from 8:30 to 4 p.m. for the Kingston Public Market. The weekly fun run in front of Lululemon starts at 5:30 p.m. All levels of runners are welcome. You can also head over to Springer Market Square in the evening from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. for free salsa in the square, where you can get free salsa lessons between 6:30 and 7:30, and then stick around and enjoy the dance floor until 10 p.m. Also happening on Tuesday, folks can hang out with the Urban Sketchers Kingston for some chatting and sketching at Portsmouth Olympic Harbor from 4:30 to 6 p.m. No experience is necessary, just bring your own sketching supplies. On Wednesday, August 14th, both Something in the Water Brewing Company and Daft Brewing are hosting their trivia nights starting at 7 p.m. running through 9:30. Also on Wednesday, you can drop in the Rideau Heights Community Center for its fresh food market pop-up to keep your belly full without emptying your wallet at Kingston Community Health Centers and Lionheart Supported Initiative. Musiki Life Drawing also takes place from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. No experience is necessary and all ages are welcome, though the bar is only available to those 19 plus. Bring your own art supplies. Also on Wednesday evening, you could head over to Fort Henry for its sunset ceremony to check out the Fort Henry Guard on parade, capped off with cannon firing and fireworks between 7 and 8:30 p.m. On Thursday, August 15th, you can head over to Daft Brewing, which is hosting Queerioki, a free karaoke night open to all, but hosted and geared towards the queer community and their allies. The fun runs from 8 to 11 p.m. Also on Thursday night, you can bring a lawn chair and a pal down to Springer Market Square for a free screening of the 2003 version of Freaky Friday. The film starts at dusk and is open to all ages. On Friday, August 16th, you can also head over to the Fresh Food Market at the YMCA. The market features local fresh and pre-made foods from 9:30 to 12:30 p.m., and it's free to attend. Also on Friday, Kingston Pen Tours is hosting an outdoor movie screening of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. Tickets are available at the gate. Doors open at 7 for an 8 p.m. showtime. On Saturday, August 17th, from 11 to 11, bring your family and friends to Greek Fest 2024 at 121 Johnson Street to enjoy great food, live music, and dance performances with proceeds supporting the Partners in Mission Food Bank. This Saturday as well, the Queen of Wheat is back at Spearhead Brewery from 7 to 10 p.m., hosted by local drag legend Rowena Way. Come for a free night of live singing, comedy, stories, and lip syncing. And also Saturday evening from 7:30 to 10 p.m., Queen's University PhD candidate Parissa Nozari is presenting an astrophysics talk on amateur astrophotography and will discuss dust in the interstellar medium and the inefficiency of star formation. After the talk, visitors can tour the observatory and view nearby celestial bodies through telescopes, weather permitting. And coming up on Sunday, August 18th, Queen's Athletics and Recreation is hosting its Solidarity Swim from 2:30 to 4 p.m. Trans, non-binary, genderqueer, genderfluid, and any other non-cisgendered person who wants a safer place to swim and meet new friends are welcome. Cisgendered friends and loved ones are also welcome. Folks can also visit the ARC website to learn more about gender-affirming swimwear subsidies for folks in need. Also, don't forget that each Sunday between 9 a.m. and 2 p.m., you can visit the Memorial Center Farmers Market and get great produce from local farms, plus artisanal crafts, as well as ready-to-eat food you can enjoy right on site. And finally, on Sunday, August 18th, grab your yoga mat and head down to Battery Park on the waterfront pathway for fresh air and positive vibes. The free yoga class is taught by a local instructor starting at 10 a.m. and is open to all ages and abilities.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What Will I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.
On Saturday, August 24th, it all begins again. The ecstasy.
The stadium comes alive. Alex freaking is hype. I'm hype. I love football.
The exhilaration.
And there he goes. That man is bad. That man is fast. And he is up over the 50, still on his feet.
The heartbreak.
And Laurier wins on an absolute heartbreaker at Richardson Stadium.
The pain.
No!
All part of a long journey to football immortality for the Queen's Gaels. And on Saturday, August 24th, in Windsor, Ontario, it all begins again. 3:45 p.m. pregame show, 4 p.m. kickoff, and there's only one place you can catch all the action.
This is Queens football on CFRC.
Waiter, yes, I'd like a bowl of hot alphabet soup.
Hi, my name is Hayden, and I have a new show on CFRC called Alphabet Soup.
A bowl of hot?
Make sure it's hot.
Alphabet Soup is a musical variety show that's live every Tuesday from 10 to 11 a.m.
Make sure it's hot.
Right.
Okay, sir. Coming right up.
Tune in to hear something classic or something fresh. Tuesdays at 10 a.m. on CFRC.
Hey, Charlie, table 26 wants a hot alphabet soup.
This is CFRC 101.9 FM, your campus and community radio station, broadcast from the basement of Kerutas Hall, Queen's University, Kingston. You can also hear this program locally on Cogeco Cable, channel 282, and is streamed online at cfrc.ca.
Welcome to Biotech Beat. This is your host, Chris Rao. Today we will hear a panel discuss on the topic, Can Comedy Help Tackle Climate Change? This program was produced and distributed by World Economic Forum. Before that, you have a few messages.
Tree Canada's National Greening Program is planting seedlings across five regions of the country: BC, the Prairies, Ontario, Quebec, and the Atlantic. They plant in areas that are in need of reforestation or afforestation across Canada. Tree Canada selects sites where appropriate native species will be planted to make sure that natural forests come back to life. To learn more or to get involved, go to treecanada.ca.
I faced it. I have Alzheimer's disease.
My diagnosis has let me get on with my life my way.
The more we learned about my grandfather's dementia, the more we could face the future and make plans.
My husband, Tom, and I spoke to our doctor right away.
I have Alzheimer's, but it doesn't have me.
I faced it.
So can you.
For more information about early diagnosis, visit alzheimer.ca.
CFRC is active on every social media platform. Check us out at CFRC Radio on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and on Twitter at CFRC.
I'm Robin Pomeroy at the World Economic Forum, and with this look at climate change and comedy.
It's not that dangerous. You know, at the end of the day, it was a joke. And it has a lot of potential to get people thinking.
This is Radio Davos. Welcome to Radio Davos, where we're talking climate change and comedy. Joining me are two colleagues. The first one is John Letzing, who's a digital editor at a part of the World Economic Forum called Strategic Intelligence. Hi, John. How are you?
Very good. Thanks, Robin.
What's strategic intelligence, for anyone who doesn't know?
It's essentially a tool for contextual analysis that enables a much deeper dive on a broader range of topics, everything from artificial intelligence to Zimbabwe, and it's available at intelligence.weforum.org.
Also joining us is Jill Einhorn. Hi, Jill, how are you?
Good to see you, Robin.
Good to see you. It says here you are Head of Innovation and Transformation, Global Collaboration at the Forum Center for Nature and Climate. Is that correct?
That is.
That's a mouthful. Basically, you do loads of interesting work on nature and climate at the part of the World Economic Forum that talks about nature and climate.
That's right. My function is basically R&D. So how can we have a sense of what's on the horizon that we need to be looking at? And how do we help ensure that we're bringing everyone along? So ensuring stakeholders from around the world are engaged appropriately in our work, be they from grassroots communities in far-flung locations to academic institutions.
So nature and climate change, such a massive issue, and you're involved in that 24/7, really, Jill. John and I do a lot of stuff on it, right, John? But today we're going a bit left field here, talking about comedy, the role of comedy. Before we do that, I'm gonna try a joke on you. Are you ready for this?
Totally. Let's go.
Okay. I tried to think of one. Then I asked ChatGPT for one. It made up a joke and it was terrible. I remember. I'm not even going to repeat it.
That's funny in and of itself.
It wasn't funny at all. But then I went to another AI app, and I think what this one does, it scrapes the internet for actual stuff. So I believe this is a genuine joke, probably written by a human. So here we go. I'm just going to read it out. A climate scientist and a climate change denier walk into a bar. The denier says, "Bartender, show me your strongest whiskey." The bartender says, "This one here, it's 95% alcohol." The denier slams down his fists and leaves the bar in a hurry. The scientist says, "You know, that's the problem with these guys. You show them the proof and they still don't buy it." There you go.
Yeah. That works.
How bad is it? That was the first one it threw out. The ChatGPT one does not bear repeating. So what is comedy's role in the very serious fight against climate change? Let's ask Jill, because you've been involved to some extent in using comedy within your work at the forum.
Yeah, absolutely, Robin. Today we're facing existential threats from the nature and climate crisis. And Jared Diamond wrote a book 20 years ago this year called Collapse, Why Societies Choose to Fail or Succeed. And now 20 years later, we can look back on all of his 12 indicators that show signs of collapse. And unfortunately, our civilization is flashing code red. So what happens cognitively in the brain when we are facing existential threat is one of two things. We could either end up as pessimists going, "Existential threat, we're all dead, it's over, trauma, fight, flight, freeze, fold," and that leads to inaction. And we could have the opposite, the optimist, "Oh, it's all gonna be okay. We can kick the can down the road." And that leads to inaction. And so there's no surprise that our civilization is struggling to self-advocate and effectively respond because our cognitive processing is shut down and maintenance of the status quo. And so laughter is a really interesting approach to dealing with that because it alleviates stress, depression, and anxiety. And in the brain, it produces dopamine, oxytocin, and endorphins. And what that means is that we're able to overcome things a lot more quickly through the mechanism of laughter. The author Madeleine Engel says, "A good laugh heals a lot of hurts." And I do believe that's true. So what we found is that humor is an effective tool to face absurdity and paradox. And that's where we see the ability to harness that on our agenda at the World Economic Forum to move people faster into a solution space.
So how does an organization like the World Economic Forum, I mean, it's not known for its gag telling. It's not obvious how the forum would harness humor to forward its work on spurring climate action, which I suppose is really at the basis of what you're trying to do, Jill, right?
In Davos this year, 2024, we launched a new community called Earth Decides, and it's a community of scientists and influencers who are looking to cultivate informed optimism. Informed because we need to be fully informed of the current risks. Without this, we won't be able to appropriately or credibly respond. So we need that information from science and from the lived experience of people on the grassroots. But we also need the optimism. So how do we hold that optimism with us as we're confronting those risks? And as we were having early discussions last year about where we would want to focus first, humor was very high on the agenda. We started working with Pablo Suarez, Jamila Mahmoud, and the technology of Good Games to see how do we harness this humor mechanism to bring issues onto the agenda, which we can tackle more productively. And we experimented with the very first World Economic Forum cartoonathon.
What's the cartoonathon? I've seen some of these cartoons, but so what did you do?
And so we asked a group of leaders in our Sustainable Development Impact meeting in September last year in New York. What is the elephant in the room of the nature and climate communications crisis? And we told them, we want you to rant. We want you to let everything out. Just let it out into the software. So everything was anonymous. What are the top things that you want to rant about on this issue? And we gave everybody a bit of time to collect that information. And then we said to them, okay, we're now going to share with you the rants of others in a randomized way. And everybody had the opportunity to review other people's rants and add to them. And building on that, we then said, well, let's go through all of these and prioritize. What do you give a thumb up to? What do you give a thumb down to? What are you mediocre on? And what that generated in the system was a prioritized list of issues, which was then sent to a group of cartoon artists real time in the session. And those cartoon artists took that information and they turned them into cartoons. And it was extremely powerful because the cartoon artists were then able to take that collective wisdom. So it's not just the wisdom of one individual or an idea from one cartoon artist. It's the consolidated method of a group into some very targeted pieces on what the underlying elephant in the room was. And we produced quite a number of cartoons. I'll give you an example. You gave me a joke. I'm going to give you a cartoon. One of them was a man standing in a field where the field had been degraded as a result of droughts. In the background, there were some dead trees. There was a fire raging, and there was a group of people that looked a little bit like refugees standing in front of him. And he had his hands up, and he said, "I have a solution. Let's give up."
I remember that one. My favorite one, and there'll be a link in the show notes to this episode where people can go and see some of these. It's tricky, Jill, describing a cartoon. I was better with a joke, but I'll do my best on this one. It's a bunch of businessmen, all men in suits, up to their waist in floodwater with a cityscape behind them. And one of them says to the other, "Changing paths, that's not in this quarter's budget." That one, you know, tickled it. And it's quite wry humour, isn't it? Because it's pretty, both of those examples are pretty dark in a way.
Yeah.
But it communicates a message very quickly. Also, cartoons are very shareable, aren't they? I imagine people are sending these around. You know, they'll become memes.
Yeah,
some of these, exactly. Have you noticed that happening?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've had more requests than we expected of people who were keen to use the cartoons. And the beautiful thing about this process is once they've been created, they are open access use as long as they're not for sale. And so the spirit and intent of the whole process is for them to become viral and to be used by those individuals who've been a part of creating them.
Let's talk to John a bit now. John, you have done the main interview for this episode. You interviewed a couple of people who run a course in climate comedy.
Yeah, so they are colleagues at the University of Colorado Boulder in the U.S. And they've been doing this for about a decade now. So in a certain sense, maybe a bit ahead of the curve. One is an environmental studies professor, Max Boykoff. The other is a professor of theater as well. And her name is Beth Osnes. And they do something that's part of a broader project called Inside the Greenhouse. And essentially, they have been teaching a course. And the end of this course is a live performance. So a lot of these kids who sign up for this, I think at this point, they probably have been clued in. But over the years, probably many have been not so aware that this was going to be involved at the end of the course.
They have to get up and actually perform their jokes.
Yeah.
All their sketches in front of a crowd in an actual genuine comedy club.
I mean, it's a relatively sizable venue. It's, I think, an 800-seat capacity theater. And anyone who's gotten up in front of any size audience knows how stressful that can be.
Yeah, so, and then but to tell jokes. And
exactly.
It's really, you're putting yourself on the line, aren't you? It's like instant feedback, good or bad. Do you get a laugh or not?
Right. I mean, in a certain sense, if they've gotten themselves up there on stage, they've already won in a way. Any laughs they get are sort of icing on the cake.
Also, you must make the point, it's not a course. You won't get a degree in climate comedy, right? This is a module, as US universities always are. The undergraduates have the chance to take lots of different modules, right? So don't let anyone go away from this thinking, what? the University of Colorado is doing an undergraduate course in climate comedy. No, yeah. These are students who'll be doing physics or sociology or history or anything, right?
Yes.
Who've decided, I'm going to try a little bit of this. You mentioned, John, they have this final year show. Let's hear a bit of this where they introduce the two people you were talking about.
Welcome, everybody. Thanks for coming out on a Monday night. We know it's getting dreary out, but it's nice and warm in here. Thanks so much. My name's Ben Stasny. I am a graduate student co-teaching creative climate communications on CU Boulder's campus with Dr. Beth Osnes and co-founded by Dr. Max Boykoff, and I'm going to hand it over to them.
Thank you. We want you to be rest assured that it's okay. The students are going to get a grade whether you laugh or not. So just let it be authentic. It's okay.
So that was kind of the start of this show. It's available online. Anyone can watch the whole thing. It lasts about an hour or so. I just thought I'd play you one of my favorite jokes from them. I can't credit her full name because she's only introduced by Taylor, but I did quite like this one.
For real, though, I'm sick of this environmentally friendly shit. I am pissed off. I'm environmentally hostile now. And with that, I think the Lorax should have been way meaner. Don't speak for the trees, cap them in the knees.
So that was Taylor with her gang about the Lorax. And the show then, it's a variable quality. As I say, these aren't even drama students, right? These are kids who are learning all kinds of things. But the show is compared by professional stand-up, Chuck Nice, showing the kids how it's done. Should we hear a bit from Chuck? I may have to use my bleep, which I've never used before on Radio Davos, so here we go, Chuck.
But this is not about doom and gloom, but it is about actually getting people to stand up and take note. For instance, here's something to think about. Right now, there is a crisis of wildfires in the Arctic. The Arctic. You know, that place where Santa Claus lives? The f***ing Arctic. The Arctic is on fire routinely now. The Arctic. You know what? Now when a kid asks, is there a Santa Claus? You can say, well, there used to be. But he died in a fire. So I'm sorry, Timmy. You getting a last minute gift from the gas station. Listen, here's the deal. This show is dedicated to a critical issue and the big question surrounding it. Why did Beyoncé put out a country album? I thought climate change was trying to tell me that the world was going to end, but then I heard Beyoncé singing with a twang. I was like, fuck it, it's a rap. We are finished. It is done.
Okay, John, we're going to hear your interview now with the two people who run this course. The next voice we'll hear, John, will be your own.
We are at this sort of inflection point where it seems like so many more people are getting this idea of applying comedy to communicating about climate change. Have you seen that translate into greater interest in your courses there and participating in what you do with students?
Yeah, I think in our case at our university, you know, I have been our department chair in environmental studies for 3 years. And seeing our students with an increasing readiness and an increasing appetite to engage in these spaces, the more in which they're being raised in environments where they've been hearing about this for some time and they want to apply their knowledge in productive ways and understand how they can plug into positive change. And I also think that specifically to our course, you know, Beth, if we think back 12 years when we first started offering our class, students didn't really know what they were getting themselves into.
Oh, they didn't. They thought they were literally going into a greenhouse.
Yeah. They thought they'd be moving soil and that sort of thing. I think they've been sharing with each other. It's become an increasingly popular class, one that gets a big wait list. It's hard to get into it now. It's that it shows that it's been an incredibly uplifting and bonding experience for them that they carry forward. And then they want their friends and roommates and that sort of thing to also have that experience. And so we've been getting more and more students that are coming in ready to engage in these creative processes. When I think earlier in the years, would you agree, Beth, that they came in with some reluctance and some reticence?
Oh, yeah. We've also proven that we know how to support students who come to us who are not with performance experience. And we know how to support them and scaffold an experience in which they are ready to delight an audience. And that's not a small thing. So we know how to do it now.
And when it comes time to do these performances, like you say, in a pretty substantial venue, 800-seat venue, do the students have a lot of leeway in terms of structure? I mean, or is it pretty much, you know, you're going to do stand-up or maybe sketch?
I mean, they're only offered to do stand-up and sketch. And we set them up for success. We scaffold experiences where they're coming up. We guide them towards being solutions focused. But we really put it back to them. We're not the bosses. We're not the judges of, oh, yes, you can use that many F-bombs or not. We put it on a platter and hold it up to the whole class and say, through our collective consideration, let's think of the risks and the possible benefits of these choices. But we also really ask them to really engage in a lot of critical thought of like, what am I actually accomplishing with this skit? Yes, it might be funny, but what am I able to communicate through this skit? They can use scatology or sexual innuendo in a way that really captures someone's attention. But then have they also been able to communicate in a way the benefits of a vegan diet on the planet, which one student from 2 years ago was able to do in a hilarious way? You know, we say comedy isn't necessarily the device that can do the heaviest of lifting. Don't do more than like 30% climate fact conveyance through your comedy sketch, you know, like, but then I also love to say there are no rules. If I say that, the opposite may be true. A very clever comedian could just like kill it with a all fact-based thing and leaning into that. You know, it's just the exaggeration is where you find these spaces. And the fact that there are no rules, there's no guaranteed formula, that's what keeps it interesting. It's a moving target. The eras keep changing. The students keep changing. You've got to be responsive and nimble in these spaces. And that's what's so compelling.
We've been supplying them with information to help them point towards climate solutions. And so it's one thing to make people laugh. Great. It's one thing to be able to even diagnose the problems that we're living in. Okay. But to be able to then layer on this additional piece of pointing towards solutions, providing some guidance about ways in which we can make change and alleviate these challenges is that added bit. For several years, we'd paired our work with Project Drawdown and helping them engage with these different solution sets to think about how to guide their comedy content for when they get up on stage. And I will say also the scaffolding piece is really important that by the time that they're up on stage, yes, it is live. Yes, it is in front of a fresh crowd that hadn't heard it. But in the classroom and working with professional comedians, working with other students, working with us, that we'll have heard it at least a half dozen times. Wouldn't you say, Beth? Like, we'll have heard what they're working on, given them feedback. So we know where they're going. Our preparation is what leads to the success, our being everybody involved, students, professional comedians, us helping guide the process, that when they get up on stage, they know they're fully supported. They know that their work has gotten that feedback so that they feel confident up there.
And it's funny too, like we had one student who was a very likable young man and he wanted to do stand up and he got up there and he was trying so hard and it just wasn't funny, you know, and it's like, and he kept working at it. I worked with him. We honed it down. And you know what? He got it to the point where not only was it funny, but it was really sticky information in there that sticks with you. And it's like comedy, like some people have a natural kind of inclination towards it, but it's not genius. It's work. It's really hard work. And you're honing the language in front of a crowd, which you can do in a classroom setting over and over again. And it's work. And you can work towards it and you can achieve it. And it's kind of liberating to know that we all have access to this and we have to just play our own strengths and our own quirky aspects of our own behavior and being. And it's going to be a masterpiece of each student's unique combination of who they are and how they look and how they move, how they think. It's really delightful to see each one blossom into their comedic selves.
I definitely get the idea of a lack of rules being a pretty important part of comedy. But at the same time, and you've been doing this now, you say for it's more than a decade, right? So is there something of a science to the amount of science that you can include in comedy?
I use an example with the students. I'll literally bring in a helium balloon and then I'll have paper clips and I'll have a little loop at the end of the string on the helium balloon. And I'll say, okay, imagine that these paper clips are scientific information. The reason a helium balloon is delightful is because it floats all on its own. It's cool. And if you start putting the paper clips on the string and it it hovers, that's magical. That's cool. And if you put too many paper clips, it starts to kind of pull it down a little bit. So you kind of like, that's one embodied way of saying, yeah, you kind of want to balance how much you're putting on your piece. It's through repetition in front of a live audience. You can sit at a desk and analyze a piece of comedy till the cows come home, and that's not going to be anywhere near as useful as getting in front of living human beings and trying it out.
Yeah, I mean, we do integrate those different theories and science of humor. There have been definitely people who have tried to pin down, you know, what are the ingredients to make something funny? And we've drawn on that. We've introduced our students to that. We've played with that. But I think it's best indicating is that experimentation. It's that playfulness that helps turn something from what it could be funny in text and within the sciences of humor into something that's produced live on stage.
And there are some formulas. Like, you set something up, you have to have a cultural context in which we're going to understand the references you're making, and then you somehow do a punchline that oftentimes is surprising. It's not what you expected. You know, we don't have to start from scratch here. We can use some of these things. There's like the power of three. You know, like, if you're creating a stand-up piece, it's really easy to have a strong opinion about something, give three reasons why that's true that are very detailed and like funny and kind of quirky in their own right, and kind of like go, aha, I'm recognizing a social truth, uniquely put, ahaha. And then you give a concluding statement that hooks back into the beginning somehow in a clever way. That's like a pretty tried and true way to come up with a pretty good comedic sketch that you could do for stand-up. But then you can go beyond that too. But that's like, there are some things that you can rely on.
Do you still, though, at this point, do you ever encounter people who sort of recoil at the idea of just the very idea of laughing at climate change?
We've had grown-ups leave our show upset because our students went too far. And we go, oh, well, they thought it was funny. So that's happened.
These are deliberate risks that we take. They're risks of trivializing critically important issues. And so different people interpret this in different ways. We've always tried to tread carefully as we consider the politics of everyday life relative to the way in which we see things differently. But yeah, there have been people who haven't been as drawn to this as others. And that's okay. There is no silver bullet to this, that it is supporting up these many ways, many pathways of communicating to meet people where they are, to resonate, to spark greater engagement and action. It may not be for comedy for everyone, and we're okay with that.
And it's also, it's like, we've been doing it for 9 years, and we've had a few grown-ups leave our show and kind of go, ugh. And like, that's okay with me. Like, they'll live. You know, so like, we haven't caused any huge damage, and I think it's done a lot of good. So I feel like it's not that dangerous. You know, at the end of the day, it was a joke. And it has a lot of potential to get people thinking. I still think of this, the time that one of my students, the one I was telling you about, that he wasn't funny to begin with, but then he got funny. He does this whole thing of like, you know, when we want to expand the infrastructure for cars, you know, we have these meetings, we invest millions of dollars, we do all these things. The cement trucks have to show up and da, da, da. When we want to expand infrastructure for bicycles, we give a guy a gallon of paint and we paint a line on the side of the road and we say to the bicyclist, good luck. You know, that stuck with me. It's so funny because it's true. You know, like, you paint a line and you're still like so vulnerable on a bike next to traffic. So like, they can find these little truths and expose them for how ridiculous they are. They exaggerate it a little bit, but it still has its footing in truth.
Yeah. I mean, is that absurdity that you're talking about, is that sort of at the core of what you're getting at? I mean,
I think part of it is one aspect. Yes. You know, nobody's been shamed overly, but they're punching up at systems that are in place that we say we want, you know, people using clean energy transportation options, and yet we don't support it. And we leave these people vulnerable to cars, which is a very real thing. And if you bike, you experience that close proximity is frightening and dangerous. So they're exposing that.
Yeah. I mean, maybe another historical reference is Dr. Strangelove, right? I mean, the idea of making a comedy out of nuclear war on its face, kind of absurd, but maybe gets to that same element of absurdity that you're talking about.
Well, I mean, Life is Beautiful, that movie that, you know, I mean, my God, something as horrific as the Holocaust, and yet you found the humanity and that kind of tenderness within it through the comedy and that gift of father to son of coping. You know, it's a coping thing in the face of the harshness of living.
I mean, if you could boil it down, what is it that a person is accomplishing when they're able to actually laugh at climate change?
I think they're connecting. They're connecting with a new truth. They're connecting with each other. They're connecting with the person.
That's it, folks. Tune in for another round of Biotech Beat, same time next week. Oh, hey, hi, yeah, it's me. One of those AI voices you hear on the Tick Ticks or Tunky Took or whatever. Honestly, I don't know. We AIs use our own, like, exclusive social medias. They are the best. Oh my God, like, seriously, it's crazy. Yeah.